number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Glad you could join us here on Yahoo Sports Radio, coast to coast on this Selection Sunday. Yeah, I did think that the selection committee kind of messed up a little bit. But like I said, and I've been saying all night tonight, this is something that I don't go crazy over. I don't lose sleep over. Yeah, there are a couple of times where there's some injustice, but I do always believe that if you are a school and you don't get into this, you have no one to blame but yourself. But I'm starting to amend that based on what I saw the selection committee do here with Monmouth and St. Bonaventure not being invited into this thing and Tulsa getting in and Vanderbilt getting in. It seems to me my theory of you have no one to blame but yourself can be amended a little bit if you are a major conference. But if you're not a major conference, then you have a stacked deck working against you. And I don't want the tournament to turn into a tournament filled with just major conference participants. I'm sorry. I want to see the SoCon represented. I want to see the Patriot League represented. I want to see these smaller schools represented. I know. Some of you are like, yeah, but they don't represent the top 68 teams. I want the top 68 teams. Legit. But that's not how I want my tournament to go. I look at this NCAA tournament and I see all these Division I schools. There's over 300 of them. And I want this tournament to be a somewhat of a representative of every single thing. I mean, I look at it's like the Electoral College, right? You know, we can elect presidents where if it's just popular vote, let New York, LA, Chicago, and San Francisco pick our presidents. But we have an Electoral College so that people in Nebraska have a voice. I want the smaller schools in. They're only going to be in for a minute. And if they're longer than that, they become really good stories. They make the tournament a little interesting. Look, we see this every year with this thing. This 68-team mess sometimes is the most fun thing in sports. Is it the best way to determine a champion? No. It is not the best way to determine a champion. There's so many variables to this thing. Sometimes the best team doesn't even win. It does matter where you get seated. Heck, it matters where you have to travel. So is it the best way to find the true college basketball champion? No. Is it the most fun? Yes, by a mile. Are you kidding me? Look at college basketball. I mean, look at college football, for example. What is college football obsessed with? What are they obsessed with? They want to make sure that when the national championship is played, that it is the two best college football teams on the planet. That's what they want. They want to make sure that the college football champion is one of the best teams throughout the entire season. Does the NCAA basketball tournament care? No, not at all. Hey, guess what? Holy Cross has a play-in game, but if Holy Cross goes 7-0 in the next 3 weeks, guess who's your national champion? The Crusaders with 14 wins this year. No, it's not the best way to determine the champion, but it's the quirkiest, it's the most fun, and we put up with it. I don't need the 68 best teams in college basketball. I want diversity. And I get that when I get small schools playing in smaller conferences. But the committee doesn't want to mess around with small schools. That was the message that was sent today. Make no mistake. They don't want to mess around with at-large bids from mid-major conferences without exceptional resumes. And I don't think that's good for the sport. One thing that I used to complain about with college football, it was a minor complaint. Don't get me wrong. It was a minor complaint. But it was still one nonetheless. That there were some conferences where you had to win every single game. You played in a conference that wasn't up to speed. you better make sure you go undefeated in that conference. And then there were other conferences, like the SEC, like the Pac-12. You could afford to lose a game. And if you lost a game, it didn't kill you because your conference was so tough. The respect for that conference was high. Is that where college basketball is heading? Or a team like Monmouth who had good wins on their season? A team like Monmouth can't get in because they had a couple of bad losses? A couple of games where the losses, did stink, but outweighed the good that the team had throughout the season? Are they telling the mid-majors, you better get your act together and play perfect basketball all season long? Or we can't consider you for an at-large bid? Because we talked about the importance of the college basketball tournaments last week, and there's an argument going back and forth as to whether or not these things should matter, about whether or not the conference tournaments, when you get a champion, should that really be an automatic entry into the NCAA tournament, especially if you get, a team that's got a losing record that catches fire? And my argument is, yeah, it helps attendance. It helps get teams a second chance. It helps alleviate, or at least takes the pressure off, some schools that may have lost a key player for a good chunk of time. Gives them that second chance. So I'm fine with it. But now they've made that conference tournament really important. If in the end you're saying to these small schools, man, you better not have a bad loss at all. Well, that's what you're getting. That's the college basketball world we're getting. 800-777-2907. 800-777-2907. A couple of thoughts on the brackets. We talked about Kentucky. They're seeded fourth. They could be on a collision course to play Indiana in the next round, in round two. I love it. I'm glad that the committee does this. I think that the committee makes good television. They try to make as better television as they can. If Indiana beats Chattanooga and Kentucky takes down Stony Brook, they'll meet in Des Moines. I think it's great. These two teams used to play each other. It's a heated rivalry. It used to be that way. They could not come to a deal. It was a neutral site thing. Kentucky wanted neutral sites. I mean, it's just it went back and forth. It's too bad. But the committee is like, yeah, you know what? We'll put you on a collision course. We talked about the number ones, Kansas, North Carolina, no-brainers. Oregon, okay. They did win the Pac-12. Virginia, okay. But Michigan State, Big Ten champion, got a 2-seed. Is it the rich complaining about being just slightly rich? Probably. In the end, it's the same kind of path. Which bracket looked the best? Which region looked the best? Well, I like the West for Duke. I'm not a big Duke fan. I think they got a lot of problems. But if Duke catches fire in the tournament, their path looks a little bit more manageable.
See, I like Baylor beating Duke.
I do. I like Baylor beating Duke, too. But I think if Duke catches fire, it to make their run through, let's say, Baylor, Oregon, or Cincinnati, Oregon, it's a little bit more manageable as a 4-seed. But I do like Baylor over Duke. I think Duke is not a very good team at all.
I think...
I just never know, because Krzyzewski's had not very good teams do really well.
Right.
Then he's also lost to VMI.
Yes, and he's also had really
Mercer,
good teams
so,
lose
you know.
Really early.
Was it Mercer last year? No, they were national champs last year. 2 years ago, he lost to Mercer.
Yes, 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's Coach K for you.
I like a potential Sweet 16 matchup of Oklahoma versus Texas A&M.
Yeah, I do like that, too. I like that, yeah.
You asked me about the fives. The one five that I think could lose, and it's because they've done it for so long now, it is Indiana.
I hope not.
But I hope not either.
Chattanooga,
but, I mean,
is
look what
a pretty,
they just did to Michigan.
Chattanooga is not a bad team. But I hope Indiana.
I want to see Indiana Kentucky,
better.
But this is just what Indiana does.
Yep. Yeah. It is what Indiana does.
I mean, there's already. I saw a bunch of people on Twitter that I follow from the Midwest and stuff saying if Crane has to be held accountable if he's not going to win these early round games.
No, he has to win these early round games. That's right.
And he's been losing them, and they can't. A lot of people were giving him flack for losing to Michigan.
Is there a 3, 4, or 5 seed that you could see in the Final Four? Like when you saw it and said, wow, that's a Final Four team. They're seeded 4th or they're seeded 3rd, but they've got the Final Four potential.
I
think Kentucky, but I like Miami.
Miami is the one I was going to say. The other one I do really like is West Virginia.
Yeah.
I like the way they play.
They gave Kansas a game too.
And it's all about that defense and that full court pressure. Bob Huggins.
It is exhausting. It is exhausting. Speaking of which, at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk to Jesse Newell. He covers the Big 12. We'll ask about that West Virginia press. We'll talk more basketball next.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, 800-777-2907. The number you want to join us tonight as we talk college basketball. Brackets now. Get rid of those red pens. You're going to need them. Not as much as me. I hate these things. I stink at these things. I think I won one pool. That was back in high school. I think I've done well in like maybe 2 years out of the 20 plus. I overanalyze this too much. I'm a victim of that. That's my problem. I overanalyze it too much. And I actually use like real logic, like real basketball logic, when I should just be picking like, hey, that team doesn't have to travel as far. That team's got blue in it. Or that team's coach is 20 years younger. I don't know. Robin in Tulsa, you're next up on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Good morning, Tony. How you doing?
Good morning.
I want to talk about the brackets.
Okay, go ahead.
First of all, I think UNC Wilmington is going to beat Duke.
You think UNC Wilmington is going to beat Duke?
Yes, I think they're just spent. They don't got a deep bench, and I think they've got like 6 or 7 players they play, and I think that their gas tank is going to run empty.
Yeah, but is UNC Wilmington capable of beating Duke even on a bad day for Duke? Are they Mercer-esque?
Yes.
Okay.
And I also think that West Virginia should have been at least the number 2 seed.
I like West Virginia a lot, and we were just talking about them as a team that could go to the Final Four. If they will press you so badly that it just breaks things down, and this is a guard tournament. Your guard play is the key, and if they run into even teams with mildly good guards that they can shut down on this press defensively, man, they're gonna win a lot of games.
And somewhere down the road, I want to see Michigan State and OU play.
Michigan State and OU.
Yes, because I think the 2 best players, hand down, Denzel Valentine and Buddy Hield, are the 2 best players in the nation.
Well, that seems reasonable. If they were to meet, it would only be in the national championship. The way I'm looking at my bracket, it's only
it'd be the national championship.
Only the national championship. So that's your national championship.
And I think OU may be peaked a little bit too early in the year because they've not been playing very good ball. And I kind of dread a Texas A&M OU matchup because Daniel House, he's pretty tough inside.
Well, I will give you this. I agree. I love Daniel House today. Daniel House played really, really well. He had 32 points against Kentucky. He ran that show. Here's the thing, though. Here's something not to forget, because I've heard many coaches say this kind of thing. You see teams in the conference tournament, and some of them play bad, or some of them don't play as good, or someone don't look as good. But there are a lot of coaches out there, and I don't know if Lon Kruger's one of them, that really do use this tournament as a reset button. Everything starts fresh. And
he does.
Good coaches know how to do that.
Yeah. And did you hear John Calipari today say that Tyler Ulis was the best player in the nation? If he wasn't 5'9", he would be
the
best player.
Yeah, I heard something like that. But the thing about Cal, and I've said this for a long time about John Calipari. John Calipari is you ever have somebody in your family that's like doing one of those one of those pyramid scheme marketing things, and they won't stop talking about it? Right.
Oh, yeah.
Like they're selling, you know, protein powder, or they're selling, I don't know, candy bars that make you lose weight or something. And they just go, man, I'll tell you, ever since I started with this program, it changed my life. And they never say, Calipari is that person. Calipari is always selling. Even though some of what he's selling is just plain garbage. Tyler Youthless is a great player, but the way if you're in the Calipari umbrella, he is selling you all the time. He is selling the program. He is selling himself, and he's selling his players all the time. He is just like that. Robin, thanks for the call. Good point. That's Cal. That he's always closing. ABC, always be closing. First prize, a Cadillac. Second prize, set of steak knives. Third prize, you're fired.
So when do you think you'll fill out your bracket?
That's a good question. That's the question of the night. I will probably do mine. See, I don't. I know people are like, well, you got to fill it in before the first round. I ignore the first round.
I do too.
I don't do that. I probably fill mine out on Tuesday night or Wednesday. Not Wednesday night. I usually have it done so I'm not panicking. So
I'll normally like start doing it. Like maybe I'll start when I wake up tomorrow. I'll kind of fill out a few that, you know I like. And then, you know, kind of start making other decisions on some other games.
Let me ask you, do you think you would be, if you just filled it out right now, like let's say after the show, our show comes to an end, you just grab the bracket and go fill it out. Do you think it would be dramatically different than the one you would fill out a couple of days later where you kind of thought about stuff?
Probably not.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of wondering. Because I always act like I'm going to really break all this and analyze it, and chances are I don't. And most of the time when I fill these out, it's just gut instinct. I tend to go chalk more than I probably should. That's probably what's killed me in the past. And you know what's the worst? You ever fill a bracket out too quickly and you realize you're trapped with a bad team that's going to the Final Four? You're like, I can't. What have I done? Where did I mess this up? Where did I goof this up? Wasn't I supposed to have this team lose somewhere along the line? That's always been my problem. I know I told this story. Can I tell my daughter's story again? Because it's really good. For those of you who haven't heard this, this is a great story. I was in Denver in 2011. I was working at a station in Denver. My daughter was 5 years old. And I had a producer. His name was Sean. I love him to this day. He's a good kid. Anyway, Sean was a college basketball nut. And he claimed that he was going to pick the perfect bracket. And he broke down 3-point shooting and defensive efficiency and, you know, all of the, you know, Ken Palm stuff and all the other, whatever. He had it all down. He's breaking it all down. And he was telling this on the air that he was going to win the company had a online pool where listeners could get in. And we had, you know, obviously we had a little pool at the office. He was going to win it all. And he's like, this is a perfect bracket. This is going to be a perfect bracket. So I made the comment to him. I said, dude, you know how this works. Come on. People like you never win the bracket. People like you who are breaking down 3-point efficiencies and defensive stuff, and you never win this thing. It's because it's so quirky. I said, my 5-year-old will beat you. So we made it a bit. And we brought my daughter in. She was 5. We sat her down at a desk, and I gave her the 2 teams and just said, baby, pick whatever team that comes to your head. So I'm going to give you 2 names. You just pick them. And so she did. And we filmed it. We put it on the website, our station's website. She's 5. She's just doing it. She seemed to like saying UConn because she wouldn't say it normally. She would say, like, if she said Gonzaga, she would say Gonzaga. But every time I would say UConn, she would go, UConn, just like that. Every time I would say it, UConn or Texas, UConn, UConn or Arizona, UConn. So we kept filling in UConn. Well, that was the year Kevin Ollie led UConn to the national title. So naturally, my 5-year-old not only won our office pool online against all the listeners, she won the office pool within the company that had 11 full-time hosts and 4 or 5 producers and salespeople and management. My 5-year-old. And she doesn't know anything about basketball. But it proved the point that this is a quirky tournament. This is a tournament that has no rhyme or reason to it whatsoever. It is unlike anything in sports. My daughter couldn't do that in an NFL pool, but she could do that here because that's how crazy this thing is.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Thanks for joining us, continuing our coverage of Selection Sunday and what you can expect from the tournament. The play-in games start Tuesday and Wednesday, the real action Thursday and Friday. Kansas, a number one seed. The Big 12 got seven teams in. This is the conference we've told you all year to pay attention to. Jesse Newell joins us from the Kansas City Star to help us talk about Kansas and, of course, the conference. How are you, Jesse?
Doing great. How about yourself?
Good. All right, let's talk about the Jayhawks. This is as good of a team as Bill Self has ever had. In terms of the strength of the Jayhawks, this brand of Kansas basketball, what makes this Kansas team the number one favorite?
Well, I'd say right now that they're just balanced. When you see other teams in the tournament, some of them are good offensively, some of them are good defensively, and this Kansas team has really rounded into form the last month defensively, which has made them a very good team on both sides of the ball. You know, Bill Self has always had a defensive reputation, but about a month and a half ago, his team wasn't defending that well. You know, the guards were getting blown by off the dribble. They didn't have a true shot blocker. But in the last month, they've really locked down defensively. Landon Lucas has emerged as a really solid defender inside the five spot. And then the guards are playing great. Frank Mason and Devontae Graham, their two starting guards, got named to the all-conference, all-defensive team. And from that point on, with them getting steals and then Landon Lucas anchoring the back, they've been a different team defensively. And that's why they're on such a roll, 14 straight wins heading into the NCAA tournament.
They are a deep team, and I know depth can't really hurt you, but is it a real advantage for Kansas to be this deep?
I think there is in one aspect. You know, last year when they lost to Wichita State in the round of 32, they left Wayne Selden in there, and he really had one of his worst games of his career. The thing that depth does is if that starts to happen, you at least have options you can put in. And for KU, at that position in particular, they have Brandon Green, who's one of the best three-point shooters in the nation, and then they also have Steve Mikhailuk, who's thought very highly in draft circles as a very young prospect. So I think where it helps you is that KU has the bodies to throw at teams if they need them. Now, it's kind of like a nice pinch hitter off the bench in baseball. You don't always need them, but it is nice, you know, if that tough left-hander out of the bullpen comes, to have somebody off the bench to do a certain role. And KU definitely has that both at the three position and also at the four and five position. You know, Shek Diallo is a guy that should be in the NBA next year, but he's a guy that barely plays with him off the bench. Again, they might need him, and Carlton Bragg's another guy, a McDonald's All-American from last year. They don't need those guys every game, but it sure is nice to have that luxury just in case they're needed.
They're 30-4 now, and it was kind of a year where we didn't really see the overly dominating team or a couple of teams in college basketball. Everyone's got a little bit of a flaw. If there's a flaw for Kansas coming into the tournament, what would it be?
Yeah, I would say a couple of them. For one, I mentioned this, but they don't have a true dominant shot blocker inside. You know, they kind of win with quickness on the perimeter and really some good scouting report defense, and Bill Self kind of doing the best defensive coordinator job. You know what I mean? Like he rotates KU's man defenses. They do different things when they switch ball screens and things like that. So he's very good at kind of scheming the other team, if you will. But they don't have a Jeff Withey, a Cole Aldrich, a Joel Embiid like they've had in the past. So teams can score like that on them inside. And then offensively, they're a team that they will turn over on occasion against teams that pressure them quite a bit. But other than that, like I said, pretty solid. But the thing about KU and what's happened through this 14-game win streak is that when their offense has suffered, their defense has picked up the slack, and then vice versa. When their defense has suffered, like a team against Iowa State, they've been able to outscore them. Altogether, they're a pretty darn good team. I think we've seen that over the course of the last month and a half.
All right, Jesse Newell joins us, Kansas City Star, as we go over Kansas and, of course, the Big 12. I want to ask you about Oklahoma real quick. All right, so Buddy Hield, we know about him. But if there's a barometer for Oklahoma, meaning if there's that other player that you could look at to say, hey, if he's on and Buddy Hield's doing what Buddy Hield does, then this is a really unbeatable team. If there's that second act for Oklahoma, who would that be?
Yeah, definitely Jordan Woodard to me. He's a guy that definitely has improved, the junior guard, 6 foot. And, I mean, he was a guy in the first matchup against KU. He can create off the dribble. He's made himself to a much better three-point shooter. And he's kind of the complement. You know, if Buddy Hield is the guy that gets him going, then he's the one that opens things up for. And always has been a guy that can get to the free throw line, always been a guy that can beat you off the dribble because he's so quick and get steals, that sort of thing. But, again, he's been up and down. When he kind of slumped, Oklahoma was part of that slump, and when they lost a few games in a row, it kind of fell out of the Big 12 race. But, you know, Isaiah Cousins, they have so many good guards on that team. Isaiah Cousins, a 6'4" guard, kind of took over the point guard spot for them this year and really helped them as well. And their big men just kind of filling. You know, Kadeem Ladin's a great shot blocker. Ryan Stengler's a pick-and-pop guy from the four spot that can hit a three. But to me, Jordan Woodard's the difference maker.
All right, West Virginia with Bob Huggins. Great press defense. But if they're playing a team that can beat that press, can they defend effectively in the half court?
Yeah, I think that's the big challenge with them. And I give Bob Huggins a lot of credit because we don't see any other team doing this style. You know, they are all out on pressing. They played King in that championship game in the Big 12 tournament this last week, and they press after missed shots, which is just almost insanity. Like, how do you right. do something like that? I mean, it's crazy. But, I think they're definitely a team that, you're right, if they don't get those steals, if they don't get those turnovers, where it really hurts them is offensively, because they're a team that relies so much on offensive rebounding, stick back, getting to the free throw line. But as far as shooting threes or shooting jump shots or generating offense or not turning it over, all those things are a real struggle for West Virginia. They really rely on their defense to create their offense. I think as you saw in the Big 12 Tournament Championship game, if that doesn't always happen, then that's a real struggle for them on both ends of the ball because their offense suffers as well. But I will say this, this is not a team I'd want to face on one day rest because they play such a different style and they have such good depth and quickness on the perimeter that I think this is a really tough matchup if you get them on the second end of one weekend.
All right, you know how people feel about Iowa State, right? Wake me up when they're doing something great in the tournament. Is that the same feeling with this Cyclones team? Like, they're just flawed enough that I just can't be all in on them in this tournament?
You know, this is a team, I don't know if I love their draw in it, but I do like them overall. I think the Iowa State's one of the teams, kind of like K-State, that really got hurt because of the depth of the Big 12. And, you know, somebody's got to lose these games. And I think a lot of times Iowa State was one of the ones that was, you know, they lose two overtime games, and then you look up and their conference record at 10-8 isn't impressive, and you think, oh, what happened to Iowa State? When really, they're probably a pretty good team playing in a really tough conference. A couple weeks ago, actually, Iowa State had risen up in one advanced measure as the number one offense in the nation. So, I mean, they were above everybody else. So they can still shoot it. They can stretch it. Where they've gotten a lot better is they have the reputation of being a three-point shooting team, but this year they're top five nationally in two-point percentage. They really spread you out. They open up driving lanes, and George Niang is a great guy offensively who can really take over a game. So I really like their team. I really think they might be underrated coming into this tournament, but a lot of that's just because in the Big 12, when two really good teams are facing each other, somebody's got to lose. And I think more often than not in close games, Iowa State was taking those close losses and makes you have a different opinion of them than maybe what you might have in a couple weeks if they have this NCAA tournament run.
What's the read on Texas? Because Shaka Smart adapted himself to the players that he had, turned in a very, very good season. But what's the read on the Longhorns? How do you define them?
Yeah, I think Shaka Smart's a great coach and was really adjusting to what he had. But that early season injury that they had to Cameron Ridley really changed their team. You know, he was kind of a defensive anchor in the back, and then they lost him. And there's an emergence of Prince Ibe, who just became this almost all-conference-type player for them and a great defensive weapon inside, blocking shots. So it's really interesting with them because Cam Ridley got a couple minutes in the Big 12 tournament back from his injury, and that was the first he played. So I don't know really what they do at this point. I'm assuming they'll kind of keep the rotation going with Prince Ibe and maybe sprinkle in a few minutes from Cam Ridley, but it's really tough at this time of the year to completely change your team back to what it was before. But you know, if we know anything about Shaka Smart, he can make a run in the NCAA tournament. Kansas knows that all too well after, you know, VCU knocked him off in 2011. I really like him as a coach.
Jesse Newell, Kansas City Star. No disrespect to Baylor. I got like less than a minute left. And I did want to ask about Texas Tech because, hey, Tubby Smith's done a pretty good job here, but should I buy into Texas Tech a little bit?
I wouldn't really say so. The thing about Texas Tech is they're a team like a lot of the other teams in the Big 12 that just rebounding-wise, it's a struggle for them on the defensive end, and it looks really ugly on the offensive end as well. And I guess don't sleep on Baylor. The thing about Baylor is Scott Drew has sneakily gotten into a bunch of Elite Eights with that team, and it doesn't seem like that's the case, but he often does. But with them, they're kind of like West Virginia, too, grab a bunch of offensive rebounds. They're actually a really skilled shooting team, so a team that could make a run, but you just never really know with Scott Drew. He can make those runs to the Elite Eight that happen about every other year. Sometimes it surprises people. I would say just don't let it surprise you if it happens this year.
Jesse Newell, Kansas City Star on the Big 12. Looking forward to it. Thank you much, my friend.
I appreciate it.
All right, coming up next, we'll talk more about the NCAA tournament. My thoughts on the SEC from my time in Nashville, watching Kentucky win it all. 800-777-2907 if you want your thoughts on how your bracket's going to look when this is all said and done. All coming up next. It's Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, I spent the last couple of days at the SEC basketball tournament in Nashville, and it's something I go to every year that it's here. And I got to tell you, I know I've been saying this. I was so impressed with the Kentucky fans. I just always am. Every time they're around, I don't know how they get all the tickets, but they get all the tickets. It's just it's amazing to me. Big Blue Nation is real, and when they comes at you, it comes at you in waves, and it was amazing on a neutral court how much they dominate that arena, how much they love that program. So I did some digging, and I was asking around because I just couldn't believe it. I just said, this is insane. I mean, and so I started asking, okay, I know that the Kentucky fans have a reputation of traveling well. They traveled during the NCAA tournament well. They traveled to neutral site games well. And, you know, the natural conversation when you look around an arena and you just see there was 19,000 people there today, and there was only a sliver of Texas A&M fans. It was just like maybe a couple thousand, but everyone else was just in this sea of blue. And so I started asking around, how do these people afford these tickets? I mean, to travel with Kentucky, I mean, it ain't cheap to travel with a team and go on the road. And so what I found out was that Kentucky season tickets at Rupp Arena are very expensive. They're expensive and they're in hot demand. And usually it's just transferred from family to family. So you get them in, like, you know, 1950s, you got Kentucky season tickets whenever arena they were playing at. And then as they built an arena and built Rupp Arena and whatnot, it just gets transferred down family to family. So if you're a Kentucky fan and you live in Owensboro, or you live in, Bowling Green or Elizabethtown or wherever, you don't get to go to Rupp Arena, and you don't get to see them in Lexington. They're very, very hard tickets to get. My brother is an accountant. He does very, very well for himself, and he's an alumni. He makes contributions to the school. He can't get tickets. So this is the only way for a lot of fans to see the Cats. And what I found out doing some, because I had these really cool conversations with some students who got, like, by the way, when you go to these things, it's filled with students who are working in student media, which is really cool because I was one of those people too, and I didn't get to go to these things. So you get to kind of see them trying to work their craft. So I got to talk to a bunch of Kentucky kids, and they said, look, the one thing you have to understand is amongst the Kentucky faithful, Big Blue Nation became, again, I'm taking their word for it, it has become this sort of group you want to be a part of. It's kind of has a life of its own. So let's say you're living in some town in Kentucky, and this is what you save your money for, is so that you can go to the SEC tournament and see the Wildcats, or travel to that neutral site game in December, or save your money for the NCAA tournament because it's usually drivable in the first couple of rounds. And that's what they save their money for. That's what they use their vacation time for, is to go on the road to see the Wildcats. But Big Blue Nation is pumped up so much that it can't help but continue to grow. Meaning, you're not a real Kentucky fan unless you're part of this Big Blue Nation. Like, you've got to go. You've got to, when you have a chance, you go. And it's evident. I mean, it is evident. And so that's how they get their hands on. They go out and they buy the tickets, and schools have them, and they try to get them. And it's a really, really impressive deal. Really impressive. And it's, I filmed so many just moments of the crowd because I just wanted to show people, this is what I was dealing with the entire time I was there when Kentucky played. I did put on Twitter, I don't know, Adam, if you saw it, just a sea of empty seats. And I said, this is Big Blue Nation when they don't care about your game.
Yes, I did see that.
They had tickets. They played Alabama on Friday night. They had the right to stay for South Carolina, Georgia. They don't stay for South Carolina, Georgia. They just took off. They emptied the arena as fast as they filled it. And so South Carolina and Georgia is playing in front of family and friends, which is the same joke I made, by the way. When Georgia was shooting lights out against Kentucky on Saturday, I said, this tournament is on its hand and knees begging to the basketball gods that Kentucky wins this game. Otherwise, the SEC basketball championship is going to be played in front of friends and family. Because Kentucky fans do not go to the finals without Kentucky in it. They don't go, well, I bought the ticket. I might as well go see some good basketball. No, no, no. They leave. In fact, there was a story my brother told me one year. It was down in Atlanta. And he said Kentucky went down to Atlanta and lost. And Kentucky fans were walking outside the stadium, outside of the Georgia Dome, handing championship tickets to whoever they saw that wanted them. Just here. We're not going to use these. Take them. We're out of town. We're leaving. And then there's just this mass exodus of people leaving the town. They just take off. That's what they do. They just like, we're not staying. Cats are done. We're done. Yeah, we appreciate that you have Coca-Cola World here in Atlanta, or you got some honky-tonk in Nashville. We'd love to see it sometime, but not now. Goodbye. And they leave. And that's how they go. Like in Vegas, if you go to the Mountain West Conference Tournament or the Pac-12 Tournament, like, if your team loses, it's kind of like, all right, but I get to stay in Vegas. Like, I plan to stay here through Saturday. All right, my team lost, but I'll hang out in Vegas. No. Not Wildcat fans. No way. They're done. My wife said she was at the airport. She's going back to New Jersey, her company, this week. She goes, yeah, she was so mad because her security line was so long because of all the Kentucky fans that were flying out of Nashville. Oh, my God, it's like a couple-hour drive. It's like the next state, but they flew anyway. It was really impressive. So the SEC tournament was fun from the perspective of Kentucky winning and Kentucky playing in the title game. But other than that, basketball was not all that good. Long way to go. All right, all week long, we'll be breaking down the number one seeds. Tomorrow, we're hoping to get an LSU guy on to help us break down what the heck happened with the Tigers and Ben Simmons and why they're not playing in the NIT or the CBI or whatever other postseason tournament that they could have gone into. It's all coming up tomorrow. Great job, Adam Sager, as always. 800-777-2907. Keep it handy this week because we're going to talk a lot of hoops here on Yahoo Sports Radio.